Great question. The Manufacturing Podcast offers news and information for the people who make, store, and move things, and those who manage and maintain the facilities where that work gets done.
Once a month, the top editors of Endeavor Business Media's manufacturing group get together to talk about the stories they've run in recent weeks and what they have working in the coming days. Please enjoy this conversation.
So, hi, I'm Dave Blanchard. I am the editor-in-chief of a couple brands here. The first I'm going to talk about is EHS Today, which covers workplace safety. First of all, let me talk a little bit. It's kind of depressing in a way. Well, not in a way, in many ways. The U.S. government, they do a really good job of keeping track of how many workers get hurt. Serious incidents and fatalities in the workplace, they keep track of all of that. It does take them a while to come up with those numbers, but we recently learned that in 2022, so a year or so ago, the number of workplace fatalities in the U.S. was up by nearly 6% over the previous year. So that's nearly 5,500 workers died on the job. So that's just a terrible number by itself. I will point out that's for an entire year, 5,500. However, on a worldwide basis, more than 8,000 workers die every day on the average. And that translates to nearly 3 million workers worldwide die every year. So again, horrible numbers. There's an international effort underway run by a group affiliated with the United Nations that's aiming to do something similar to what OSHA is trying to do here in the United States, and that's to get companies and organizations to be more intentional about workplace safety. How do you do that? Well, some of the ways are using technologies and implementing what are known as safety management systems, which basically an organized, structured approach to safety. So being very intentional about safety, not just saying, you know, don't touch something that says don't touch. Another area that we're focusing on, which kind of related to all that, is training and education. So studies have shown new hires and temporary workers are among the most frequently injured workers. And that could be for a number of reasons, but one of the main reasons is these people just weren't trained sufficiently to know how to operate equipment, how to protect themselves from getting in harm's way. So new tools such as microlearning, augmented reality, safety apps, and other ways of customized learning are becoming more prevalent. And EHS Today recently launched a portal called EHS Education, which offers on-demand training resources in many, many different areas to improve on-the-job safety skills. So that's EHS Today recently. The other brand I work on is Material Handling and Logistics. One of our intrepid reporters, David Sparkman, recently produced a comprehensive analysis of the current state of logistics and transportation. So I'm just going to offer some highlights from David's recent report, which I found fascinating. Transportation providers, mostly trucking companies here in the U.S., but they were making real good money, during the COVID pandemic and afterwards. They were struggling to, when retails were really struggling to keep products on the shelves, the companies, whether it's Amazon or the big companies, the big trucking companies, they had more work than they could possibly, they knew what to do with, but as with everything else, when the pandemic ended and then, they weren't buying the same types of products in the same quantities and with the same urgency that they were. So many of these smaller companies, trucking companies in particular, who had popped up during the pandemic, they have since gone out of business or they've had to consolidate with other companies. Even one of the biggest companies in the country, Yellow Freight, they went bankrupt and out of business. So it's just been kind of a mess for the trucking trying to react to the aftermath. Also, another problem for trucking in particular is that the freight rates have just been depressed. Freight brokerage industry has also seen a similar pattern of boom and bust. They've seen a lot of bankruptcies and closures. Rail freight, lots of problems for rail, although you would think, well, rail should be doing fine. Well, no, the black eye that the industry as a whole suffered from the East Palestine derailment and hazmat explosion and problems with their labor union, that kind of has just soured the public perception of rail overall. The ocean freight industry actually is or has been booming, but lately, on a global basis, since ocean freight is a global industry, there's been some bottlenecks at North American ports, plus conflicts in the Middle East, with especially at the Red Sea. It's really kind of hurt global trade. Nevertheless, ocean freight does appear to be have bright prospects ahead if some of these other problems can be forestalled. So that's it in a nutshell for me. I'm going to turn it now over to Laura Davis.
Thanks, Dave. Hi, everyone. Laura Davis, Editor-in-Chief of New Equipment Digest. So this past month in February, we ran a couple stories, the first being about Japan, who's one of the biggest makers of robots in the world. It's called Japan's 2024 problem. Basically, their government had a regulation for truck drivers and overtime. With that, there's a big push in their country to actually start pushing faster for adoption of automation and robotic technologies, autonomous forklifts, stuff like that, to compensate for not having the workers as long because they can't use that overtime anymore. Second story we ran was the Insurance Institute for Highway Safety. It is a coalition. They are urging our lawmakers in the U.S. and the National Highway Safety Administration to start requiring for all vehicles speed limiters and sensors to be put on not just commercial vehicles where they're already used somewhat, but also in civilian cars. With the adoption and push for self-driving technology, they're very worried about more accidents becoming prevalent. So they're urging them to include what are called intelligent speed assistance, ISA, and it reads posted signs or GPS mapping of the speed as you're driving. So it'll either alert you that you're going too fast and want you to slow down, or there's other technology components where it can actually like automatically start removing power from your engine to slow you down. So that's something that's going on in the news right now.
Laura, just to add in on that, I mean, NHTSA, I've covered the auto industry for many years. This is Robert Schoenberger over at Industry Week. They have a long history of painting the targets after the shot's been fired. They did this with rear view cameras. They did this with airbags. They've done this with a lot of technologies that the Insurance Institute will push for some change that actually improves safety. And then NHTSA will follow up by making it a regulation after that technology has hit about 90% adoption. This is definitely the case with anti-rollover technology for SUVs back in the late 90s and with rear view cameras back in the mid-2000s. And it sounds like this is going to be another case of that. The most cars have cameras on them already that are reading those stop signs and speed limit signs and feeding that information into the GPS. And so why not go ahead and mandate something that we're almost, you know, probably 90% of the way there too.
That was it for those stories. I just have a note, something I found interesting with MODEX coming up, and I was watching a video of a new autonomous forklift demo video, and I was very surprised by all the comments that were on the video from people talking about how nice the demo environment was, how perfectly waxed the floors were, there was not a lot of racking or storage in the warehouse at the time, and everyone was saying how nice that is, but they would really like to see these forklifts demoed in an actual environment that has uneven flooring or potholes or exposed to the elements with a bunch of racking in the warehouse. And I thought it brought up an interesting conversation that could be had about this push for digital transformation with all these companies and how and why some companies are not making that change. And I think it's valid because if you can put all this money you want into this equipment and this technology, but if it's not going to work for your warehouse and there's other things you could be putting that money into, I think it's completely valid. I just think it's a larger and interesting conversation to be had at some point. So that's all I have, and I will turn it over to Robert Brooks.
Thank you. In February, in Foundry Management and Technology, we took a fairly deep look at the technology available for automatic pouring of molten metal into molds. It's a fairly emerging, I would say, technology, not entirely standard, but becoming a standard, and involving various methods of laser tracking and so forth, as well as a high degree of automation, depending on the volumes that are being poured. The interesting point about all of this is that it necessarily follows on the ongoing boom in new plant construction. Somebody who's investing many millions of dollars in a new plant is not going to count on the availability of very brave and strong men to stand over those molds and pour the molten metal. So automatic pouring is becoming more and more common and more necessary. We also had an interesting report at the more materialistic level, materialized math metallurgical level, about research into modeling of aluminum alloy oxidation. This is more important than most people probably think. The high sensitivity of molten metal to atmosphere is an incontrovertible fact. There's a degree of acceptance involved here. The top layer will oxidize and seal what's below it from further impurity. But how that happens and why that happens is something of a mystery. And the research that's underway now is attempting to apply a mathematical model to that. And if they succeed, it could be very important in the availability of more metals and alloys for things like additive manufacturing and the ability to produce by 3D printing or metal laser sintering with a variety of alloys in larger dimensions and shapes. My other bailiwick is American Machinist, and during February, it seems like every story pointed back to Boeing. As most people know, there was an incident aboard a Boeing 737 MAX 9 aircraft on January 5th, in which the side plug door blew open in flight, and happily, no one was seriously injured in this incident, and everyone returned to the airport safely. But the investigation is ongoing and will be ongoing for some time, it appears. You can read much about this at American Machinist. I won't go into all of the details, except one upshot here is apparently the permanent or semi-permanent presence of the FAA now in the manufacturing plants of these aircraft. I don't know that that will actually be permanent, but for the foreseeable future, that's going to be the case. And it will certainly affect how things are done and production levels that may be achievable for a company like Boeing. And that's all I'll say about that. I introduce to you to Scott Akapol for Smart Industry.
Thanks very much, Robert. I am Scott Akapol, and I'm managing editor of Smart Industry. We have gotten a lot of tractions on our site from results of two recent surveys of manufacturers. Very eye-opening results. One survey points to almost all manufacturers are struggling with data and data-related issues. Data is the foundation for a lot of the digital transformation efforts. It's erecting roadblocks to the ability to use technology such as AI, most notably, and automation as well. And certainly it does present significant challenges to their digital transformation efforts. That report was called the Advanced Manufacturing Report, and it was released just this week, conducted by Forrester Consulting and sponsored by manufacturing giant Hexagon. That survey also revealed that 97% of manufacturers also reported facing hurdles in collaboration and productivity, and that nearly 40% are falling behind, becoming what the report calls digital laggards by failing to adopt automation in their factories and warehouses. Coincidentally, taming data is going to be part of the topic of an upcoming March 26th episode, Smart Industry's contribution to the Great Question of Manufacturing podcast. So look for that to be coming up later this month. Another newly released survey of security professionals, specifically in the U.S. and the EMEA region of the world, served as kind of a wake-up call. about industrial OT and how extremely vulnerable it is to intrusion. The report identifies significant gaps in securing access to connected OT environments, connected OT environments being one of the real keys to help manufacturers converge their IT and OT functions for greater scalability. And overall, this survey revealed that most industrial organizations, most of them, meaning close to 75% of them, lack visibility into their OT assets. And only a bare majority of 55% believe their organizations effectively or very effectively mitigated risks and security threats, meaning cyber threats, to the OT environment. We've got some exciting programs coming up from Smart Industry. One this month, the podcast episode, and two next month, and including a webinar on how to get the IT and OT personnel in your manufacturing company to get along. It's a cultural discussion as well as a technological discussion. So we're looking forward to that. And with that, I'll kick that over to Tom Wilk over at Plant Services.
Thanks, Scott. Appreciate that. It's been a really interesting couple of months for plant services. Our most important stories from the past 2 months center on workforce issues. It's been about 10 years since I joined plant services. And over the holidays, I was reflecting on what had changed since I joined the magazine. And our magazine focuses on maintenance, reliability, operations, and asset management specifically. So we did a cover story interviewing a couple of key industry figures to find out, in their opinion, what had been changing in the maintenance and reliability toolbox since 2014. As you might expect, a lot of the usual suspects are represented. The impact of the IoT and remote/portable condition monitoring data collection technologies were represented. Some talked about robotics. I was as impressed, though, almost all of the speakers that we talked to focused on the soft skills side of maintenance and reliability, emphasizing things like diversity and inclusion in the workplace, emphasizing the importance of M&R workers to be multilingual if possible, to accommodate a workforce that speaks more than one language. This article has been pretty well received in industry. It focused a couple of our columnists, Jeff Shiver in particular from People and Processes, who writes our From the Plant Floor column. Also this week, I'm reporting from Knoxville, Tennessee, having just wrapped up the MarCon conference. That's a conference run by the University of Tennessee's Reliability and Maintainability Center, headed up by Klaus Blake. And this week's conference really kicks off the conversation in this area of industry, the maintenance and reliability side of things. There was a great track on AI and the impact it's having on maintenance and reliability. There was also a great track on diversity and inclusion in the maintenance and reliability workplace, where you had a 30-something maintenance manager who was on the young side to be a manager in this area, who's also a woman. And she talked about, number one, what it's like to be a supervisor at that age and in the workplace. And number two, what it's going to take to retain people like her in the workplace, both recruitment and retention. The other highlight of MarCon was that I got to moderate a panel discussion on a skills development program called Unturning Steel. It's headed up by a military veteran who realized that there's a problem with a lot of veterans transitioning back into the private sector workforce, and that it's a difficult transition. And he knows a lot of veterans where there wasn't much support to help them adjust from what was a very orderly, regimented world to a world where it's a lot more fluid, let's say, a lot more dynamic. And so his goal with this program is to do two things at the same time. Number one, help veterans with these transitions. And number two, build up the skilled workforce for U.S. manufacturing. We've all seen the stats that by Deloitte and others, which project a shortfall of upwards of 2 million skilled workers in manufacturing. And it was my pleasure to talk to the guy who heads up Unturning Steel, a guy named Bill Leahy. And a whole bunch of program participants, including a couple of young veterans who had been part of the program this past summer, who worked at a plant up in Green Bay, Wisconsin. They talked about their experiences. So with that, I'll kick it over to Robert Schoenberger.
Thanks, Tom. Over to Industry Week, it's been a busy month. It always is. But probably the biggest story that we covered, and we covered it a couple different ways, is the just continuing issues with China trade. The last month, we got a report out from the Commerce Department that Mexico had surpassed China as the number one trade partner with the U.S., and that we wrote a story about that got some decent traction. And then following it up, Harry Mosier, who is an occasional contributor of ours and who has dealt with onshoring issues for many, many, many years, had a follow-up piece quite kind of questioning if that's really the case, that Mexico might have passed China in terms of dollar volumes, but if you look at the volume of goods coming into the country, China is still dominating that. And Mexico trade and China trade are very different. Mexico trade generally involves products that are also made in the U.S., just in different volumes and different levels, where the goods we're importing from China are not goods we can easily replace with goods from Mexico. So they are generally commodity type, low volume, high volume, low value products that we're not going to get from other countries. So the idea that we can replace China with Mexico as our major trade partner is really not likely in the long term. So that got a lot of traction. As in a piece from Laura Poutre, who is one of our senior editors who covers the automotive industry and leadership topics, and she looked at the threat that China poses in the electric vehicle space. Yeah, the electric vehicle space is slow. The growth has slowed in the past few months, and there's some concern about whether or not some of these startups will survive. And in the background of all this, you have a handful of Chinese manufacturers who are selling $20,000 and $25,000 electric vehicles throughout Asia. And if they can, some of them are looking at building plants in Mexico, at which point they'll be able to easily export those vehicles from Mexico into the United States and really undercut the U.S. burgeoning electric vehicle market, which is generally in the 45,000 to 60,000 range for starting prices. So this could be good for consumers, but pose a major threat to the companies that were hoping to have a few more years of high profits before the lower cost vehicles started coming in. So that threat is very much on the horizon, not something we should see next week or even next month, but definitely within the next year or two. And outside of China trade, one of the big topics we still continue to hear a lot about and still a lot of interest in is the digital manufacturing. We had an article at the beginning of the month looking at six trends shaping digital manufacturing and generative AI and retiring workforce numbers. Generative AI is still generating tons of interest. There aren't a lot of manufacturers that figured out ways of using ChatGPT on the shop floor, but at the same time, generating machine codes and things like this, programming your tools, finding more creative and conversational ways of interacting with those machines could open up advanced machine tools to a less technically oriented group of workers. And given the skilled worker shortages right now, that technology could provide some solutions there in the near term. So definitely things that we're going to continue following up on, but just because trade from China was down in the first couple of months of the year does not look like that's necessarily meaning that things have changed that radically. A lot of this looks to be based on certain products that have been slowed, not some massive shift in who we're actually going to be trading with in the years to come. And with that, I'm going to turn it back over to Dave Blanchard to talk about what's in the works for the rest of March.
Thank you, Robert. For EHS Today, we've got a few articles in the works. One is a look at how technology can make the workplace safer. So we heard from, I think every editor before me on this call was talking about various uses of technology. So safety professionals probably aren't thought of as early adopters of disruptive technologies. But that being said, artificial intelligence, for instance, that continues to become more prevalent in the workplace. Robert Schoenberger just talked a little bit about ChatGPT. But for safety leaders, what they're particularly interested in would be another use of AI. That would be predictive analytics, which basically you get a better idea of what types of workers in what types of situations are more likely to get hurt. And then you can take steps to prevent those sorts of incidents from even occurring. And then you can train workers to be better able to recognize and to avoid those types of situations. So that's just one way that safety is kind of warming up to the idea of AI. Some other article topics that we'll be looking at: mental health awareness. For instance, the construction industry in particular is just having a tough time trying to figure out why it's so prevalent. Why is mental health and suicide so prevalent in the construction industry? And more importantly, or equally importantly, what can you do to improve that situation? And another big topic that we cover pretty much on a weekly basis at EHS Today, just because it's so prevalent and it's so popular with our readers to know about, is regulatory compliance and what to do about it. So OSHA and the EPA and some of the other regulatory agencies, they are pretty much regularly announcing changes or updates or tweaks to existing rules. And there's federal OSHA that covers most of the country, but then many states, such as California, have their own state OSHAs and they have their own regulatory agencies. So we try to help our readers stay on top of all of those changes and announcements. Let me just shift gears now and look at material handling and logistics, what we're going to be talking about in March and beyond. Well, for the MHNL audience, which means everybody involved in material handling, logistics, and supply chain, the biggest thing going on this month, the month of March, is the MODEX show. So at the risk of torturing an analogy, it's kind of the material handling industry's version of March Madness. The show, if it follows true to form, will feature more than 1,000 exhibitors and 40,000 or more attendees. Based on all the pre-show product announcements that I've been seeing, the dominant topics will probably be automation, AI, autonomous vehicles, and any other kind of technology that makes it easier and faster to move products through manufacturing, through warehousing, transporting them through the supply chain, and ultimately getting the products to the end user. The reason for that interest, besides just technology making things faster and potentially more efficient, it's just so hard and it's so expensive to find and retain enough human talent to keep everything flowing. So I will be reporting more about MODEX after the show is over, and it's usually a great place to find a ton of article ideas. So now let me turn it over to Laura Davis.
Thanks, Dave. Coming up, we also will be showing any new debuted launched product that comes out of MODEX. So be looking for that. We also have a feature coming out talking about an advancement of thermal insulation. There's a new type of spray insulation that was developed to coat and insulate equipment, and it offers better benefits. It tackles corrosion. There's just a host of benefits that are coming from it than what is currently on the market. And then second, we have a case study coming out that discusses how a manufacturer of fans and blowers, they overhauled their compliance and regulation data system to keep abreast of all the changes. And something that they didn't expect to happen was that they increased their sales by tenfold. They created a better relationship between them and their customers. And it's a really interesting case study. So be looking for both of those. Those are big news for March coming up. So I will turn it over to Robert Brooks.
Thank you. Coming up in our next issue, following on the last issue, where we discussed pouring technologies, we're going to be looking at molding technologies, more particularly new installations of molding technologies. This is high volume business. We're discussing sand molds, not permanent molds or die casting molds. It's high volume business, relying very much on an increasing degree of automation, but that's sometimes difficult to achieve with such complexity that we're discussing here. We're also going to have a look at enterprise technologies that are emerging for the metal casting industry. They need to be fairly specific for an operation that is producing cast parts. So going to try to hone in on that a little bit, give our readers some insights that they may have missed. In American Machinist, there is an emerging sense of concern about about industrial demand and manufacturing demand. And we're going to be looking at that in a podcast interview coming up next week that I hope everyone will listen to. What are the leading indicators? Machine tool orders is always an area to look at as people plan their future production programs. And the direction of machine tool orders is a good indication of that. So that'll be coming up very soon. We also have a report coming for American Machinist about the difficulty of establishing a smart factory. What are the things that a plant or a machine shop has to be aware of as they prepare to comply with the supply chain's demands to be a smart operation? Details like the increased volume of data, the ability to replicate and receive data in real time, and the ability to make that data available universally are some of the details that will be addressed. So I hope everyone will look forward to that. I'll turn it over to Scott Ockepol.
Thank you again, Robert, for the handoff. We like to talk about synergy at Smart Industry, about how our written work leads into our programs. So we'll be having some written coverage about leading up to our March 26th Taming Data discussion, which follows our coverage of the Hexagon Forrester study on problems with data at manufacturers. We'll also be doing some lead-up preview coverage to our ITOT Getting the T's to Get Along webinar discussion, which is scheduled for next month, April 11th. This week, next week, I apologize, it's already Friday, we have contributed articles coming up on two subjects: why IoT device manufacturers need to prioritize cyber resilience. Cybersecurity is an issue that lingers in many parts of many areas of the business that we cover, of manufacturing that we cover. And this story will deal primarily with, given the difficulties of defending Internet of Things, manufacturers are going to need to adopt new strategies, and that sticking with their same cybersecurity methodologies isn't going to work. We have another piece coming up that touches also on AI, a very popular topic with us in 2023 and 2024, meaning if they haven't already, manufacturers need to begin applying AI in pilot programs to acquire knowledge, hone skills, and achieve early successes. I think it was Robert or someone who mentioned earlier that the dabbling is still going on with AI. This article is all about the dabbling that is going on with AI at manufacturers, trying to figure out how they can phase it in and make use of it in their operations. Thank you very much. I'll turn it over now to Tom Wilk again.
All right. Thanks again, Scott. It sounds like there's going to be some synergies between Smart Industry and Plant Services in the month of March, too. Our lead story for the month is going to be focusing on safety issues, specifically cyber safety. You hear a lot of concern in the maintenance and reliability community about the possible risks of installing so many wireless data collection devices around the plant, remote monitoring devices. Now, we're confident that there's a lot of cybersecurity baked into these devices, but nevertheless, that nervousness is out there. So Anna Townsend, our managing editor, is going to explore what are the actual risks, either financial or data safety or even hazardous risks, when it comes to what bad actors are doing in the cyberspace. Are they mostly locking systems down and installing ransomware? Are they actually trying to manipulate sensors to either throw off batches of product and or cause even worse harm to the physical environment and into physical safety? In other media areas, we'll be doing our first live streamed webinar. Plant Services partnered with ESA, that's an international association serving the electric motor pump and apparatus repair industry. ESA does a survey every 3 years of its members on how they and their customers are approaching machine health issues. So we're going to go live with that on March 20th on the Plant Services LinkedIn page. and we'll be storing the archived version of that for on-demand viewing later on as well. Finally, we're going to have a podcast this month about how one organization took on a particularly tough FMEA project. That's failure modes and effects analysis. One member of the team sort of knew what they were doing to run the investigation, but the FMEA process was new to the other members of the team. So together, they sort of demystified what was going on and located the source of some of their machine issues. The last thing in March is that Plant Services will be launching its every other year predictive maintenance survey, where we survey our readers and others in the field on what technologies they're using for predictive maintenance, what types of maintenance modes they're engaging in. Are they looking just for predictive failures, or are they going beyond that into things like prescriptive analytics, where AI might help you identify possible outcomes based on actions you take? And also, my favorite question is a sentiment analysis. Simply, what do you think of your predictive maintenance program? Do you like it? Hate it? Happy with it? Dissatisfied? It's a great index of how people really feel about using these advanced technologies in the workplace. And with that, Robert, let us know what's going on with Industry Week.
Great. Thank you, Tom. I guess first off, I'd encourage anyone who's listening to not take a shot every time we mention the word synergy, because that would be a very dangerous thing to do at this point. And I'm going to mention it again here. One of the things we have two things going on right now that are kind of tie into what some of my colleagues are talking about in their brands. One is our annual technology survey is out in the market right now. You can find links to that on the IW website or in our newsletters, but we're trying to get that sense of what's going on in the industry, how people are thinking about different technologies. And a couple of my colleagues here, Tom and Scott, both mentioned wireless and what's going on with that. We have a story coming up looking at 5G technologies, not the ones that you use for your cell phones, but the same system, but plant-based 5G, companies that are installing these high-powered wireless devices in their facilities, really to prepare for the future. So they'll have the digital infrastructure ready as the amount of data they're going to be sending to and from their machines grows in the coming years, and as digital systems become more tied in with the physical machines doing that manufacturing. So it should be an exciting month. Looking forward to bringing those stories to you from all these great brands and Endeavor Business Media's manufacturing group.